it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The beer is cold and the wings are hot. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
All right, here we go. A game seven tonight north of the border. Our neighbors in Toronto getting ready with the Blue Jays looking to hold off the Mariners. We welcome in Sho Ali from The Fan in Toronto, The Fan 590. Sho, thanks for joining us. Give us the vibe. Paint a picture for us, man. This would be the first chance for this team to get to the World Series since I was graduating high school.
Joe Carter, fireworks, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, the city is bumping right now. I'm actually on my way down to the Rogers Center as we speak. And, yeah, I got to say, I was at the Rogers Center last night for Game 6 when Addison Barger hit that home run to make it 4-0. And then later on when Vladdy hit the absolute laser beam later in the game. I honestly don't think I have ever heard the Rogers Center be as loud as it was. I mean, it's just kind of wild how the city has – they've always embraced the Blue Jays, no question. But how I think everyone has turned into this likable team. They've loved what they're seeing. It's definitely one of the more resilient teams I think we've seen in recent Blue Jays history. I mean, it's like you said, it's been a long, long time since the Jays have had this opportunity, and everyone's embraced them wholeheartedly.
Yeah, they take down the Yankees along the way, and now one win away. And so we're biased down here, and a lot of fans jumping on the bandwagon because of Ernie Clement, Rochester's very own. What has he meant to the Jays this season?
Ernie Clement has been awesome. Honestly, I've had a couple conversations with Ernie over the course of the season. He is not only just a terrific player, tremendous guy, no question. And I think over the course of the season, because we kind of got to see Ernie play a little bit with the Blue Jays, kind of in a part-time role, so to speak, in 2024, obviously a lost season. And I think coming into this season, there was a question as to, okay, well, you know what, do you really want Ernie Clement to be your everyday third baseman? And not only has he proven capable of carrying that load, I actually think he has become a huge leader for this team. I mean, certainly leaders like George Springer will always be there. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will always be there. But I've heard from a lot of different players over the course of the entire season, certainly that has continued into the playoffs as well, that Ernie Clement leads by example. You see him doing all the little things, too. It's not just the defense. You know, he's hustling out, diving to first base to make sure he beats out throws to first. I mean, he's hitting incredibly well so far. I think he's tied with Vladdy after last night for the most hits so far in the postseason by any player dating back to the beginning of the wildcard round. So Ernie's been phenomenal, and he's doing this all with, like, the stitches and a broken finger to boot. I mean, he's a warrior. I think he has become – there's always, like a gritty fan favorite, I would say, every year. And I would be stunned if people did not unanimously pick Ernie Clement for that.
Sho, there's been so many memorable moments of this series with Seattle. I mean, you can remember Scherzer yelling at Schneider to get back in the dugout and to finish that game. But, you know, it seems like a long time ago that the Jays were in a 2-0 hole. Do you have an instance in this series where you could say that's when it flipped, that's when it turned? I mean, they were down in Game 3, and it seems like the bats got hot at that point and haven't really turned off since.
It's funny because the guy who is on the mound in Game 3 for the Blue Jays is the same guy who's going to be on the mound tonight in Shane Bieber. And I really do think the Bieber start in Game 3, I mean, first of all, that's why you go and trade for a guy like that. And he had, what, like a so-so start, 2 2/3, three runs, two of them earned against the Yankees in what could have been a closeout game. The Blue Jays lost that game and then closed the Yankees out the next game. But the Bieber start against the Yankees was all right. I think there was some questions as to like how he would perform in a even bigger spot against the Mariners. And then he shoved in that game, right? And I six innings, eight strikeouts. The last time out in game three, I couldn't have been more impressed by what the Blue Jays got from Shane Bieber. And I think there was a quote he had said after game three, because he'd given up the early runs in Seattle. The place was absolutely rocking at T-Mobile Park. And you're like, okay, things, you're on the verge of going down 3-0. There's still a lot of baseball in front of you, but you still want to put a good foot forward, pardon me. And Bieber went back to the dugout and said, hey, guys, I got the good stuff tonight. Pick me up. And they did pick him up. And again, he shoved for the rest of the game. So I think I think that is one of the bigger turning points after being down 2-0 in this series and losing both of the first two games at the Rogers Center. But I also think it bodes well for what you might get from Shane Bieber tonight. Because again, Bieber, by and large, since becoming a Blue Jay, has been very good. He's been very consistent. He's a pretty steady person, just generally speaking. So I think that does bode well for tonight.
Joe, I remember this is years ago where like we're seeing Vlad Guerrero Jr. still in AAA. Like, what are they waiting for? Promote him. And, well, it brings us to the story here today. And not only is he putting up this MVP performance, but how he has kind of just embraced the city, but just embraced the country. Is he the true leader here on that team?
Yeah, I think there's no question. He's definitely one of them. I mean, Vladdy last night, it was really cool. He was chatting with Hazel May of Sportsnet, doing the post-game interview on the field. And you could see on TV, I saw this afterwards, because we're sitting in the booth kind of just watching him do this interview with Hazel, and the camera's circling around him.
Yeah.
He kind of pauses mid-moment to take in the adulation from the crowd, and they're cheering, Vladdy, Vladdy, and he loves it. One thing I've learned about Vladdy over the years is that he definitely feeds off of the emotions, whether it's positive or negative. And I think when things don't go well for him, I think he takes it so personally because he knows he can do better. And I think we had kind of seen that when the team was pressing in that losing streak towards the end of the regular season, right before they clinched the division at the Rogers Center against the Rays. And then now here he is. He had some time off right before the playoffs started, thanks to the bye, and he has been absolutely on one. I mean, I actually think it's kind of crazy that in the history of the franchise, and again, there's been a lot of losing in there, no question, but again, this is a team that won back-to-back World Series at one point. Even then, I mean, Vladdy with the home run last night, tying Joe Carter and, of course, Jose Bautista with the most home runs, not just in a single postseason, but like ever in franchise history, is pretty incredible considering he's done it all in one postseason run, which is not even over yet.
Joe Ali of The Fan Toronto joining us on The Fan Rochester in advance of tonight's Game 7 between the Jays and the Mariners. You mentioned the advantage that you have with Bieber going on the mound. Talk a little bit about how they might be able to tee off on George Kirby, who's getting the start for Seattle.
So George Kirby, the last time out, we talked about the Game 3 matchup, and it was the same pitchers on the mound to start, Kirby for the Mariners and Bieber for the Blue Jays. And we talked about Bieber on the Kirby side of things. 8 earned runs the last time out, I believe, and he gave up 3 home runs. I can't imagine, knowing that it's a winner-take-all, I can't imagine that the hook on Kirby will be a long one, right? I got to think that if he gets into trouble, they will only let him see the Blue Jays lineup, maybe not even a full 2 times through. I think maybe even more so because the Blue Jays bottom of the order has been so, so good for so much of the season and definitely in this postseason run. But Kirby, I got to think the hook on him will be a quick one because, again, he's definitely very good. He strikes out a lot of guys. He has some nasty stuff. But at the same time, you know, if you're the Mariners and you have Brian Wu available, who has not pitched a ton, obviously, because of injury, but he did pitch in Game 5 the other day, I got to think Brian Wu will be available, even if it's not for a particularly extended outing, maybe just even a couple of innings, maybe even just 3 outs, frankly. But Brian Wu, I got to imagine, is available. Luis Castillo, I got to imagine, is available. I think Dan Wilson, who has, to his credit, been pretty judicious with his use of the bullpen, I got to think he will be, at the first sign of trouble, he will pull Kirby from this game. So I got to think you'll probably see a million pitching changes tonight later on in this game.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question because both teams, I mean, the World Series doesn't start till Friday. So at least you will get some rest there. Who would you say has the deeper, I can't even say bullpen, pitching staff overall. And part two of the question, I thought the game of the year in this postseason was that Seattle 15-inning win over Detroit. If it does go to extra innings, any cause for concern that Seattle has been there, done that already here in this postseason?
I do think if the game goes to extras, the Jays will be all right, only because they have not, and we'll have to see how the game goes tonight, of course, but if Beaver manages to go, you know, even five innings, even if he doesn't get an out in the sixth inning, I still think the Blue Jays will be well suited because they do have guys like Chris Bassett and Eric Lauer in the pen who have not thrown a whole ton these playoffs. I mean, Bassett has only thrown once in the Mariners series, and I think he went 1 2/3. So I think he will certainly be available if you needed length for any reason, especially if it's extra innings where there's no ghost runner as well here in the playoffs. So you don't really have that to contend with necessarily. Lauer, same goes for him, the guy who is kind of ping-pong back and forth in that swingman role from the rotation to the bullpen and back and forth a couple times, really. So I think you have those two options. But no question, like the Mariners' bullpen, the Mariners' rotation, especially in a winner-take-all Game 7 with Game 1 of the World Series not until Friday, you can throw basically anyone you want. Like I got to imagine the only two pitchers for either team who are not available tonight, I got to imagine will be Trey Savage and Logan Gilbert just because they pitched yesterday, right? And even then, if the game were to go to 15 innings, you're probably asking Logan Gilbert and Trey Savage to get you some outs anyways, right? So I do think you're right in that Seattle has been there, done that, and probably does have a deeper bullpen. But because of the presence of guys like Bassett and Lauer, I think they'll be okay for the Jays.
And, Shob, the good news is the winner of this series gets punished by the L.A. Dodgers. So how do the Jays stack up against the Dodgers, if that's your potential World Series?
Yeah, no question it would be difficult, right? Because the Dodgers have, you know, a litany of, multiple Hall of Famers up and down the lineup. And if you do somehow manage to get past Shohei Ohtani, who arguably had the greatest postseason playoff baseball game I've ever seen in my entire life, maybe ever, frankly, in the sport, in the history of a sport that's well over 100 years old, I think once you get past Ohtani, you're still dealing with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Will Smith and all these other very, very talented players. So no question it's difficult on the pitching side. You got, you know, Blake Snell and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, obviously Ohtani himself. You have Tyler Glasnow. They can deploy the Emmett Sheehans, and even Clayton Kershaw is out there. He can be deployed out of the bullpen and maybe even start in a longer series. But, yeah, I think while it will be tough, I do think the Dodgers' weakness this entire year really has been their bullpen, and they've managed to skate by in the playoffs because they've simply had Blake Snell and Yoshinobu Yamamoto pitch like 7 to 9 innings at a time, essentially, which obviously helps in a lot of cases. But I do think the Dodgers can be had, and the Blue Jays only faced them the one time this year. Obviously, they lost that series. They won the last game in an extremely dramatic fashion with the Jeff Hoffman getting pulled after walking a million guys, and then Mason Fluharty, a rookie of all people, coming in and striking out Shohei Ohtani to help end that inning. But yeah, while I do think the Dodgers will be favored against either the Blue Jays or Mariners, I don't think they're going to sweep their way to another World Series title.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I remember 2 years ago, and this was the off season. It's a Friday afternoon, and we're doing our show, and we're tracking this flight that is supposedly going from California to Toronto. Shohei, as it turned out, was not on that flight. It was some erroneous reporting. But regardless, we knew the Jays were in the mix. How biggest storyline does that ever get brought up? I'm just wondering this alternate universe where, you know, Shohei Ohtani decides to be a Toronto Blue Jay.
Yeah, you know what? People talk about that all the time here still. You would think after a couple of years they kind of move on from it. I will say it probably wasn't helped. And I think this is an added storyline, no question, if the Blue Jays do advance. But what probably wasn't helped by the fact that Roki Sasaki, the chase for him and this international signing pool money bonus, all the discussions around whether or not they were going to sign Sasaki as he was posted from Japan. And then he also chose the Dodgers after it looking like it was on the one-yard line for the Blue Jays. I think that has been an added, part of this entire conversation. So I do think that is something that I think Blue Jays fans talk about a lot. I don't think the actual Blue Jays themselves talk about it a whole hell of a lot. Although I guarantee you if the Jays do advance, no question will John Schneider be asked about that in his opening press conference.
Joe, with the season winding down here, there's been a lot of talk about the future of Major League Baseball. And as a guy that's there and covering the game and in a market that has a lot of people and maybe a little bit more wealth, owners that are certainly well off north of the border in Rogers, with Rogers Center and everything that comes with that, talk a little bit about what the future of Major League Baseball could look like when you talk about salary cap. Is that even something that's worth discussing, or is that something that is never going to happen? I'm hearing both sides of the story on that, and you know, while a stoppage would stink, does it make the game more competitive and prevent a team like the Dodgers from being in the World Series year in, year out?
I do wonder, honestly, if the Dodgers win, I mean, even if they don't win, certainly I'm sure this will be a talking point, but if the Dodgers win and then in the offseason go on, and there were some reports that the Dodgers are circling Kyle Tucker, who is sure to be the prize of the free agent class, of course, one of the best hitters in the world. If they go out and sign Tucker after winning another World Series, I got to imagine talks about a lockout will only intensify, especially from an ownership perspective. I think a lockout, I don't want to say it's inevitable by any means, which would obviously suck because, you know, our jobs are made more fun by talking about Major League Baseball games. But I do wonder if when it comes to talking about like what could be implemented from a labor stoppage standpoint, I do wonder if not a salary cap, but I wonder if a salary floor is something that will be discussed. And again, some owners will obviously be reticent to discuss that because, you know, when you talk about revenue sharing, when it talks about how much money teams get from teams like the Blue Jays and like the Dodgers and, you know, like the Yankees and stuff that get distributed to smaller markets, a lot of those teams spend that money, and a lot of those teams pocket that money as well, right? And I think that's what irritates the fan bases of places like, you know, the Marlins or places like the Pirates, for example, right? Or places like the Rockies, maybe. So I am curious if a salary floor is going to be a big sticking point in labor negotiations. Because I also have to think if the owners try to institute a salary cap, the players are just going to say no, and that's a non-starter, right? So if that is the case, then I do worry about a lockout, but I think there are going to be a lot more issues than only a salary cap, if that makes sense.
So if the Jays win tonight, I mean, one guy that I feel bad for, Bo Bichette, he hasn't been healthy here. Any chance we could see him activated for the World Series?
I think there's a chance, yeah, for sure. I think there's a really good chance. I mean, he started doing running. We've seen him run the bases, and he didn't have a setback, certainly, when they were announcing the ALCS roster last week, but he definitely wasn't 100% ready, which is why there was, even when Anthony Santander was taken off the roster, I don't think there was even a question as to whether or not Bo would be able to come back. I think the answer to that question was an emphatic no, but with Game 1 of the World Series not happening until Friday, if the Blue Jays were to advance, I think Bo would be activated for the roster. I really do, just because he seems to be a lot closer. Now, would he be 100%? Like, no chance, right? I mean, he sprained his PCL. That's probably not something that heals until the new year at this point fully. But yeah, I think if George Springer is playing after taking a 97-mile-an-hour fastball off the knee, I think after about a month off, roughly a month, maybe a little bit more, by the time we get to Game 1 on Friday, if the Blue Jays were to advance, I think there's a very, very good chance Bo would see the active roster.
How impactful is that? Because for so much of this year, show, it felt like he was the straw that stirred the Blue Jays' drink. And when they were kind of sliding a little bit there at the end, I think that was a lot of what fans were kind of pointing at, the absence of Bichette as to why they were doing what they're doing. But here they are, one win away from making it to the World Series, even without their star in the postseason.
No, of course it would mean Bo is healthy, but if Bo is healthy and he's even like 75% of what he was during the regular season, and of course there'll be questions as to how you construct the batting order. You know, if he's DHing and he's not playing at shortstop, Andrés Giménez has played a very good defensive shortstop because he's a platinum glover. So I think you like the flexibility that's given you. But of course, if Bo is batting cleanup, simply from an offensive standpoint, it gives Vladdy so much better protection. And again, we were talking about this even going into last night's game, that, you know, what's the incentive for Seattle tonight to ever pitch to Vladdy. If you think you can get Alejandro Kirk in the cleanup spot or Dalton Varsho batting fifth, if you think you can dispatch those guys relatively easy if you're Dan Wilson and the Mariners pitching staff, then there's no real incentive to ever pitch to Vladdy, right? You just, if the bases are empty, you pitch to him and throw him junk, or if the bases have literally even one runner on, you walk Vladdy and take your chances with Kirk or Varsho, who have been, you know, at best, I think, okay these last couple of games. So, yeah, I think if Bo is back there instead of Kirk, and you're now having Kirk and Varsho bat 5 and 6, or you have some other configuration combination of batters, I mean, yeah, I think you'd feel very, very good about Bo. Now, again, it means you have a bit of a crunch with how you use George Springer, especially now that he took the ball off the knee, in terms of how you use the DH spot. So that would make it a little more complicated, but I'm sure the Blue Jays would welcome that problem if it meant Bo could bat cleanup behind Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
So for folks who love the Jays or they just want to kind of listen online here, what time do you start here today? Tell our audience where they can find you.
Yeah, the game will join the network at 8 p.m. Eastern. The first pitch is at 8:08 p.m. Eastern with Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue. We do have some pregame coverage live from the Rogers Center starting at 7:30 with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. And then Blair and Barker will be along. Win or lose, we will be along for an extended Blue Jays talk postgame. So I'm hoping it's a happy extended Jays talk postgame and not a negative one, but we'll be on pretty much all night starting at 8.
Fantastic information, show. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck tonight. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
You got it. There is Show Ali. Blue Jays pregame show host. You can hear him on the Fan 590 in Toronto.
Yeah, why are they pitching Vladdy? that should be the one. Just like, okay, you're not intentionally walking, just throw him garbage at this point.
Yeah. I kind of like the matchup for the Jays tonight.
I'm worried about Springer. He doesn't look right to me. Like, whatever it is, bothering him in his knee. And if this goes to extras, I mean, Seattle couldn't be killed against Detroit.
Yeah. Right.
This series has taken so many turns. It wouldn't surprise me if Seattle ended up winning tonight.
Nothing would surprise me with the way this series is going.
Although, you know, is there a more random... Hockey is the most random sport. And then number two on the list is baseball, right?
You know, I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to flip those two and say baseball has the widest variance. Just because it's so damn hard to hit a baseball. With the stuff that gets thrown at these guys, I just think that it's impossible to predict what could actually happen. And also, when I'm betting, I've lost more money on baseball than I have on hockey. So I think you can control hockey a little bit more. But regardless, it's been a great series. Fun postseason so far. Sorry, Yankee fans, that hasn't gone your way. But the idea that the Jays could make it back for the first time since 1993, the Mariners can make it to their first, only to be sacrificed by the LA Dodgers. It's still fun.
Yeah, and are the Dodgers going to be kind of the catalyst? I wasn't aware that Kyle Tucker, I mean, can you imagine? Now, Kyle Tucker, Houston's like, oh, we're not going to resign this guy. He ends up getting traded to the Cubs, and I thought he was hurt. He didn't really have a great year for the Cubs by his standard, but there'd been talk like, okay, Boston would be in on this, perhaps the Yankees.
Sure.
But if he ends up with the Dodgers, I'm like, okay, what are we doing here?
Right. And maybe a salary floor is the option, not a salary cap. It'll be interesting to see how the offseason goes once we get past it. I'm going to stick with my prediction that the Dodgers are not losing another game, that either of these teams, whoever wins tonight, is just a sacrificial lamb for a sweep, and the Dodgers will make quick work on their way to back-to-back. I mean, we didn't even talk about Shohei on Friday night.
That's not even fair. 10 strikeouts, 3 home runs, 1 home run out of the stadium altogether.
Otherworldly. We are watching the greatest baseball player of all time.
How dare you? Baseball writer would be insulted by...
I can't believe you would say that!
Babe Ruth.
Tell me I'm wrong. I don't know that you can, because what we're seeing or what we've seen out of him is fantastic. I'm not going to say the greatest postseason performance of all time. I'm not going to go that far.
You could very well easily say that, seeing no one's ever had 3 home runs and 10 strikeouts in a game.
I'm saying with what's on the line. Oh, I mean, this was an NLCS game 4 where you're up 3-0. There's not a lot of pressure. I mean, if this was a Game 7 performance, then I think you're saying, oh, my God, are we ever going to forget what he did in Game 7 of the World Series with everything on the line, and they went to him, and he struck out 10, and he hit 3.
Can we identify with Brewer fan on that? Because they're like, okay, I might as well tune and watch. Oh, this guy again, fantastic. Yep. All right, I don't need to watch any more of this, but I suppose I should.
Yeah, painful. Hey, well, there'll be a great answer to one of your trivia questions on Monday nights, Gene. What was the team that Shohei faced in Game 4 of the NLCS in 2025? We're going to go to Indianapolis next hour, talk to Kent Sterling. Sterling in the morning at 98.7 WGCL, one of our favorites here when we want to talk about the Colts, who got another big win yesterday, one-loss team that nobody, absolutely nobody predicted before the season started. They found some magic here with Daniel Jones. Certainly Jonathan Taylor playing out of his mind, and that defense is formidable with Lou Anarumo at the controls. Kent Sterling will be joining us next hour when we learn about one of the Bills' potential opponents here in the AFC. And we have time for your calls as well at 866-4326 at 585-866-4FAN.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.